Welcome back to Modern Politics. I'm Warren Balog.
And I'm Emily Yukis.
It's the third week of May 2024, and apologies to our regular Modern Politics viewers. We've missed a few weeks here. In the last month, we've been traveling a lot on the weekends. We went to several events. I had my Charlottesville court appearance, as you guys may have heard about, with the appeal that we're filing with the Fourth Circuit, the lawsuit against the city of Charlottesville and against the police chief Al Thomas and the Virginia State Police.
Yeah, we went to the V-Dare Castle, which was pretty awesome.
Yeah, that was a great event. You know, they're here in West Virginia, so it was great to go to that. Met a lot of great people there. And then most recently, this past weekend, we went to the Political Cesspools 20-year anniversary conference, which it was a private invite-only event for longtime Political Cesspool viewers. But that's why we were sort of building up to it. You guys may have noticed why I had James Edwards on the show and why I made a recent appearance on the Political Cesspool. And that was a fantastic event. That was unbelievable.
Oh, yeah.
And we saw a lot of our friends there, Tim Murdoch from White Rabbit Radio, and Jared Taylor was there, Sam Dixon, many, many other people. I met some people that I've heard about for many years that I've never actually met. Brad Griffin of Occidental Descent, Hunter Wallace, also Jason Kessler. And we kind of compared notes on our Charlottesville lawsuits. He has a new book out that I got a copy of about Charlottesville and many others. It was a phenomenal event.
Yeah. A month of great networking.
Yes. And we did do a live recording that's on the Political Cesspool website. And also, I can point you guys to Brad Griffin. He wrote a fantastic review on Occidental Descent of the event itself, so you guys can see a little bit more about that. But particularly meeting Jason Kessler and, as I said, comparing notes about our Charlottesville lawsuits and talking about Charlottesville and looking at through his book. I haven't had a chance to read it yet, but going through it, I really wanted to do our latest episode of this show on something that happened a few weeks ago that we haven't really had a chance to comment on. Now, it's something that I was able to cover live as it was unfolding on the War Strike stream that we did, but a lot of details have emerged since then, and I think this is one of the bigger stories of the last month. And that is, of course, the battle that took place at UCLA the night of April the 30th into May the 1st. Of course, it's the University of California, Los Angeles, and what happened there that night was one of many protests that whole week, Emily, of campus protests.
Yeah, it was popping off.
By students protesting against the genocide in Gaza. And that whole week, two-week period, a call was made somewhere higher level to just crush these things, to just destroy them and smash them up. The same way they did with not only with us at Charlottesville, with the alt-right, but also it gave me flashbacks to Occupy Wall Street, because back in the day, this is how they dealt with Occupy Wall Street at a certain point as well. They just made the decision, particularly Michael Bloomberg in New York City and Rahm Emanuel in Chicago, among others. But I always point to them because they're super, super liberal, socially liberal Jew mayors. Rahm Emanuel, our son of an Irgun terrorist himself, made the call to send heavily militarized police to break up the anti-Wall Street demonstrators.
So, yeah, what do all these protests have in common? What is the common denominator here? Well, it's not hard to put together the pieces. It's Jewish power, and it doesn't matter who's challenging it. You can be a brown person standing up for the browns. You can be a leftist. You can be a Nazi. It doesn't matter who you are. They're going to treat you the exact same way, which is like an extreme showcase of hard power. Usually these Jews stick to soft power, pulling the strings behind the government. But, you know, when there's IRL protests in the street, when there's IRL action against Jewish power, they will pull out the big guns.
Right. And the night we covered this on War Strike, I was shocked at what I was seeing. And it was pretty shocking to see everything, what happened at Columbia University and all the rest of these. I mean, this is the largest, I would say the largest anti-war movement in American college campuses, actually since the Vietnam War.
Yeah.
Even during the War on Terror, the Iraq War and the Afghanistan War, there was not this level of protest activity. Now, of course, what's happening in Israel is 10 times worse than anything that was done under George Bush and the neocons, even the mass slaughter of civilians, you know, upwards of now 40,000, I think, civilians
that have been killed.
Probably a lot more than that, but those are the numbers we're dealing with. I mean, they've kicked Al Jazeera out of Gaza, Israel has. They've shut down UNRWA, the United Nations Relief and Works Agency, the aid people. Of course, the Israelis have been attacking the aid trucks that are coming in. They're looting them and trying to destroy the food so the people there starve. Everything since our last show on this subject, everything has just gotten much, much worse. The United States Congress has just been passing bill after bill. They passed the big bill with the Anti-Semitism Awareness Act. So they've officially incorporated the IHRA.
International Holocaust Remembrance
Alliance. Yes.
Oh, Alliance.
Their definition of anti-Semitism, which includes everything up to including saying Jews run the media.
Jews have more loyalty to Israel than the United States.
Yes.
Is included. That's anti-Semitic. So
it has huge implications. In other words, it's going to be treated the same way in terms of government hiring and who gets funding and all this type of thing. It's going to be treated the same way as any type of discrimination. So, you know, if your restaurant put out a burning cross and a KKK man sign with a noose and says, you know, N-words,
Stay out.
That's going to be treated now under law the same way. It's going to be treated the same way if you say, Jews have dual loyalty to is the state of Israel, or Jews are control Hollywood or the media. It's going to be treated the same way.
So restaurants can't even put up like a pro-Palestine sticker on their window now or something like that. They could get sued for that.
They could get sued by the Justice Department. The Justice Department could do a civil rights lawsuit against them if this all goes through the way they want it to go through. So Congress passed that. There's new bills that I keep seeing stuff about in Congress that they're passing to stuff where they're going to actually cut funding to the Department of Defense if we don't fund Israel. I mean, the Republicans are going all out.
Yeah. Did you see that they passed something that would give people, Americans that serve in the IDF, the same benefits as they would get if they served in the American military? Did you see that one?
Yes, I did.
Yeah. And then, you know, so it's like, it's like the jig is up. It's like it's ridiculous. It's as they're coming down with this hard power, with this eradication of criticism of Israel. I mean, it's just getting worse and worse because it's becoming so much more obvious, and it's all coming to a head on these campuses.
Yes. And this one in UCLA is of particular relevance to anybody who was at Charlottesville, and also the particular legal fight that is going on over Charlottesville. So everyone is clear. I was just in front of the Fourth Circuit Court of Appeals, Federal Court of Appeals in Richmond, Virginia. I had help from the Free Expression Foundation there, who their attorneys were representing my case and making the argument that the city of Charlottesville and the Virginia State Police essentially did not protect the First Amendment, right to free speech, free assembly, redress of grievances, etc., and also the Equal Protection Clause of the Constitution, meaning that they did not enforce the dispersal order at Charlottesville equally. So they dispersed only the Unite the Right marchers and not the Antifa, as we all know. Well, the interesting thing is that the argument that is being made and has been made and was made in Jason Kessler's lawsuit and was made again here, is that there is no right to any kind of police protection when you're exercising your First Amendment rights.
Right.
So in other words, if you are trying to speak freely, you have no right to police protection.
Right.
Now, just to illustrate the point, I don't think the judges were well disposed towards our case based on their demeanor and the way they were treating my attorneys. But they clarified the point with the other side, with the attorneys representing the Virginia State Police and the city of Charlottesville. And the one judge actually asked them, so if I'm to understand you correctly, if Gandhi showed up to do a protest, and he said this over and over again, and I'm going to get this transcript of this so I have it for my book someday. He said, if Gandhi comes out to do a protest, totally peacefully, totally nonviolently, and violent people, bad people show up to shut him down, Gandhi is not entitled to any police protection whatsoever to have his right to speak freely for whatever issue he's protesting on.
Yeah, he could just get mobbed. He could just,
yes,
he's just sitting there and he could just get mobbed on all sides. Sorry, nothing we can do about it.
And the attorneys on the other side affirmed, yes, that is our argument. That is our legal argument. And that is the argument. It's in the rulings made by Judge Moon. Everything that has come out of those Charlottesville lawsuits, that is the legal argument they are making, that you have no right to this. So what the implications of this, Emily, are huge.
Yeah.
Huge.
And it's all, you know, people are like, why are you continuing this case? Charlottesville was 7 years ago. Well, we can see here at this campus, these campus protests, that this is actually more relevant than ever.
Yes. The way this works is you show up on an important issue, whether it be we don't want to see the Lee statue taken down, we have a permit, or we think that UCLA, we're students of UCLA. Now, UCLA is a public university. So publicly right. funded. They are not a private university, obviously, which means that the First Amendment applies in full effect on the campus of UCLA, okay? They are not allowed to shut down people based on what they're saying, based on their speech. What the implications of this are is that if you have a argument or a grievance or a cause that you want to go out and do a protest or a demonstration or something about, and any group of miscreants or thugs or bullies or gangsters or whatever, or terrorists, assemble to shut down your speech, which, again, this is called the heckler's veto. When an event is canceled because hecklers create enough of a disturbance that they have to cancel the event, it's called the heckler's veto, which is supposed to be illegal under the Constitution. Yet somehow in the twisted logic here, they're making it legal. What it means is, unless you are armed and equipped and ready to defend yourself, as Patriot Front does, and that's why Patriot Front goes out there with shields and knee pads, and why they train in formation and do all this kind of like Roman legionaries in order to exercise their free speech rights, because Patriot Front was founded by veterans of Charlottesville, Thomas Rousseau and others, and they know what the playbook was there in 2017, 2018. I mean, I personally experienced it not only at Charlottesville, but then later at MSU. It was the same thing. So it means unless you are organized to defend yourself, then you cannot exercise your right to free speech. However, this is the big catch.
They'll say you're rioting. They're saying you're inciting a riot if you bring shields or any measure of defense.
Yes. Or they'll say that you're the one initiating the conflict. Now, all the headlines about what happened at this night at UCLA on Tuesday, April the 30th, all the headlines about it in the mainstream news have been something along the lines of clashes erupt.
You know, yes.
Clashes.
Just happen.
Battles.
Spontaneously.
And the thing about this is there wasn't mutual combat. There was no two groups fighting each other. What happened was the pro-Palestinian people were there peacefully demonstrating, and they came under massive, massive attack for hours by counter demonstrators, counter protesters, and we're going to get to them in a minute.
Who were they? We can.
That's
we
the big thing here that has come out since I covered this with Stryker. But they came under massive, brutal, violent attack, and the police did nothing to intervene. They sat and watched as these people were being attacked for hours.
Yeah.
And then the police moved in, and what did they do? Did they break up the violent and arrest the violent counter-protesters who were attacking the pro-Palestinian people?
No. Of course not.
They assaulted the camp of the pro-Palestinian people, smashed their barricades down, ripped down their flags, blasted them at close range with chemical agents and rubber bullets and flashbang, you know, grenades. They just demolished these people and violently ripped down this camp. And many of the people were injured and many of the people were arrested. So what we see, the pattern, when you go against Jewry and organized Jewish power in America, as you said, it doesn't matter where you're coming from or who you are.
Yeah, yeah. You can be the foot soldiers that these Jews have used for years, the leftists, the blue hairs, the faggy browns, you know, the big glasses, nerdy girls, etc. They'll turn on them like a dime if they go and challenge their master, which is what they're doing.
Yes.
And the left is fighting Jewry now. We got to hand it to him. I know people hate these guys.
Well, these are different people in many cases, and this is a point I've been making for months. These are not the – in some cases, there's some overlap. But in most cases, these are not BLM. They are not Antifa. Now, there is a healthy sprinkling of Jews, you know, Jewish Voices for Peace and others who are liberal Jews or peacenik Jews – who have been effectively gatekeeping the pro-Palestinian people.
Yes, yes.
They're there, and many
but
people
have said
this.
But they're actually Zionists in disguise.
Yeah, I mean, they are there to protect Jewish power, not to harm Jewish power. They are people who ultimately, regardless of what is in there going on in their hearts or in their minds, ultimately the effect is to prevent these pro-Palestinian demonstrations from turning into a full-fledged protest against Jewish power in America. Right. That's what they're there to do.
Yep.
But generally speaking, these people are not the same anti-white scum that were out during the George Floyd riots.
Well, there's no black people at all. I mean, black people don't.
There's a few, but
this.
I mean, they're not.
They're not like BLM. They're not like monkeys in the street.
Well, the big thing, the big difference is that the BLM riots were all funded by these Soros backers. And they were trying to say that about the Palestinians. It's just not true. But the BLM stuff was all astroturfed. And it had the full backing of the media, and it had the full backing of the schools and the administration and everything. None of these protests do.
No,
of course. The schools are trying to shut them down.
And you see how they're shutting them down versus at BLM. Of course, the famous pictures going around of the cops kneeling during the BLM protests, and now the cops bashing like female liberal professors' faces in for protesting for Palestine.
Right. It's a complete... beyond double standard. It's just total boomerang, like the way the one was treated and the other.
And I saw somebody, people online are saying, oh, the democratization of the JQ was a mistake. You know, it's bad that all of these people now know about Jews and Jewish power, because they're saying, you know.
Who's saying that?
Jews.
Jews
or Jew lovers. Jews and Jew lovers are saying that. You know, it's bad for all of these, like, low IQ people or leftists to know about the JQ because they're going to get stuff wrong. But it's like, my response is that, you know, you can blame the Jews for that, for going full mask off in like such a retardedly overt manner and such a ham-fisted, embarrassing display of their power, this mask off moment that is like, how can they not connect the dots? Like drooling mongoloids are going to connect the dots about Jewish power now.
Right.
And that's a good thing. Like, who cares if they get a couple things wrong? I'm all for it. Who cares if they, they're calling Jews reptiles, or they're calling Jews Satanists or pedos. Let's not have any cartoonish ideas about the JQ as Jews continue to act like cartoonishly evil psychos.
Right. Well, I also want to point out that the students who are out there today, I know if you're out of college and you're older, it may seem like it's all the same crowd. But I mean, the people who are students, the people who are freshmen, college freshmen today in 2024 would have been.
Oh, 16.
Yeah, they would have been in high school, in early high school, freshmen or sophomores in high school. In 2020, the year of Floyd.
So this is a whole new generation. And
these are different kids. This is a different crowd. So the
youth is extremely anti-Semitic now, and it's great to see this anti-Semitic movement uniting both the left and the right against Jewish power.
So I want to go over what actually happened that night. I kind of described it for you guys. I want to show some videos. Some of these I showed on War Strike. I'm going to show them again. Some of them are new. Essentially, that night, we saw the barricades that were set up. You could see the barricades actually had on them, like, Mossad Free Zone written on them.
Nice.
Which is so ironic, because they're attacking the counter-protesters attacking the barricade that says Mossad Free Zone.
Our Mossad.
Yes, Armisad. They're right. And we're going to, spoiler, we're going to get to that.
Oh, okay, yeah.
So they came under attack, and you can see the footage here. These are brutal attacks. They have clubs, they have bars and maces. They are just viciously attacking them, attacking the barricades. They were using chemical agents, of course, pepper spray and mace. They were also using improvised grenades. So what they were doing was they were throwing fireworks, not firecrackers, but fireworks, like the big kind that you shoot up in the air. They were tossing them over into the group, this packed group in a barrier.
Free Palestine!
Yeah, I saw them. They're not like little, like, you know, sprinklers or whatever they're called. They're like full on, like, ba-choom.
Yeah, imagine
like if rocket launch.
Yeah, you have to be very careful with those, and there's a reason why they fire them up into the air, because those things can do serious damage to people if they go off. So it's basically like artillery, improvised artillery that they're hitting people with.
I mean, it's like what they're doing in Gaza.
It's exactly what they're doing in
they're
Gaza.
They're just, yeah.
Well, that's what Tom Cotton said, that these are little Gazas.
Yeah,
these are all
Gazas.
Little mini Gazas. And it's true. It's actually true, because they're doing the same thing to them. So they're attacking them. And again, who are these counter-protesters that came along all of a sudden? Now, I want everybody to keep in mind, because it's been a while since we've done a new show on this. This is all before. This is all about a week before the whole American flag bro thing, gay-op,
yes,
that was done.
And we will talk about that.
This was coordinated. This was planned, and we know it was planned, and we know it was coordinated now. And there are big, powerful money Jews working with Israeli intelligence, putting this whole thing together to shut down free speech on American campuses. That's what's happening. That's what the punchline here is, guys. I'll skip to it straight away.
It's what Jews do with white guys. It's like, we're being attacked. Let's bring out the white guys. You know, it's what they do in the Middle East, you know, go die for Israel, except at a, you know, a micro scale. Let's get these white frat boys to do our bidding and frame it as white boy summer based
right.
Anti-Palestinian counter protesters. Woohoo. And of course, you know, people have been doing this for as many years as we have. You know, we see that right away. We can sniff that right out right
well,
away.
Well, the frat boy thing turned out to be a total gay-op, or at least what started it was. The big one was this one with this American, where these guys were all rallying around the American flag. And this was at UNC Chapel Hill. Okay, this was the first one. And these frats got huge donations out of this. This fundraiser has now accumulated $515,000 raised for this frat.
Which is, you know, it's like, when this is so obviously a gay op, it's like, when else do white kids, right wing white kids, get support like that? I mean, when they get doxxed, like, their lives get ruined. And a lot of the white kids that were actually white did have like a big blowback from that. Well, all the Jewish students mysteriously didn't get doxxed at all or anything. I saw this one Jewish student that was up in their faces, that was, you know, calling them all sorts of slurs and names and just, you know, being really, you know, grotesque about it. And nothing came down on him.
Well, let me just compare, because this is what the comparison was. The autistic white girl, Emma Philbeck, who's 14 years old, a high school freshman, was brutally attacked by blacks in the Franklin Simpson High School bus on the night of April 18th. There was a terrific Justice Report article about it. Her fundraiser has now reached $9,000.
Oh, my God.
And the frat boys who were there at the flag have over $515,000. Now, it came out later with on Laura Ingraham, and I'm going to play a clip of this, that the frat boys on that campus were actually Jews, and that it was a Jewish frat, and they were there to defend Israel.
Isaac, what motivated you to defend the flag?
Yeah, well, first of all, thanks for having me on. I really appreciate it. And I'll say, when we talk about motivation for the flag, the primary reason I was on that quad, right, before this ever even began to become an American issue, I was on there because I'm Jewish and I'm Orthodox, and a lot of members that were holding up that flag were. And so we were there really just kind of holding up our Israeli flags and trying to stop hate, and there's been a lot of anti-Semitism around the country. So we were there first and foremost for our country of Israel.
But that tried to start a thing where the right was, and Ben Shapiro was on it. Oh, these are anti-American people. They're pro-Hamas,
yes, yes.
And they're anti-American. In
yes.
other words, leaving out of the question the people of Gaza and leaving out of the question Israel and Jews entirely. So
right.
Take it out. Take out the people of Gaza, the 2.5 million civilians and others in Gaza, and also remove Israel and Jews out of the equation entirely. And you set it up as though it is
pro-Hamas versus anti-American.
Yes, yes. And the pro-American people are out there defending it. So,
well, which is, of course, exactly what Israel does with America, you know, in their battles every time.
Yes.
So, you know, it's not that hard to see, but a lot of people were falling for it. A lot of people were falling for it. Oh boy, we can be racist this summer. Let's do the anti-Floyd protest. Yay. Let's go dunk on some Browns. White boy summer. So, you know, a lot of white right-wingers did fall for it, but a few people did call it out. We called it out. I know the Groypers called it out. They were right on that. They called that out right away. So that was really good. And it got to the point where the people that called it out were able to get ahead of this gay op very quickly and were able to squash it down with everybody and say, no, we're not supporting this. We're not supporting the Jews.
Yes, it was shut down very quickly. And this is in part thanks to the free speech that is currently, knock on wood, that we are able to enjoy on Twitter.
And boy, have we been enjoying it.
Yes, we have. And guys, go ahead and follow me and Emily on Twitter. I'm at Ahab4K.
I'm at Alfred Alfer77 Linda. Yeah, go follow us there. We've been having a lot of fun on there.
Yeah, so this thing failed.
So it's like the Jews are really, they're kind of screwed here. They're trying to pull out every trick in the book here. They're really pushing for this new, like, oh, if you're pro-white, you have to be pro-Jew. Don't you want to ally against the Browns and the third worldists, you know, type thing now? They're really trying to get whites on their side now. And it's like, guys, it's a little too late for that.
They've been pushing harder than ever. But anyway, the idea, though, of counter-protesters, this is the thing. Because we had these pro-Palestinian protests, Emily, were going for weeks and for months prior to this, prior to like the last week of April, when the decision was made to shut them down by force by the schools. When the schools made the decision to break up all these encampments with just naked police force. When that decision was made at some high level, a decision was also made to unleash counter-protesters and to make it very risky and very painful for people to go out and protest for Gaza. Now, we've already seen them use terrible tactics of doxing and humiliating and attacking like Muslim students and everything else, calling them Hamas sympathizers. That's been going on for months. But this is the first time that they unleashed violence, which I have to say is, we, you guys saw the video, it's Antifa-like. It's Antifa violence.
Oh,
and
yeah.
In many cases, it is Antifa. It is Antifa.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. Antifa, they're like, well, have they disappeared? Because usually, you know, wouldn't they be fighting for these
they
brown
people?
They traded
their red scarves for ball caps. That's what they did.
That's a good point. And the Israeli flag.
Yes. And so, and you can see this because all the pro-Palestinian people are still, not all of them, but some of them are saying things like, oh, these are white supremacist Zionists. I saw them say that. Or they'll say that these are fascist tactics. But if you go to the media in Hebrew and you see the videos that where they're sharing this stuff, or you see it where they're sharing it among Jews, there's a thing that says F Nazis, F Hamas.
Yes.
So in their minds, They are attacking Nazis.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. It's all in their mind. Everyone's Amalek. Everyone's Nazi. Everyone's Hitler. All the Goyim. It's all the same.
Yes. Yes. So they were attacking these people savagely for hours in a way that nobody during the BLM stuff, not one BLM demonstration got counter protesters like this.
Can you imagine like a bunch of white guys during the BLM protest, guys like shooting rockets into the
charging and attacking with clubs and sticks and rockets and attacking them with pepper spray and everything. I mean, there would have been the police would have
come down on those guys.
They would be facing 10 years in prison maybe even more. I mean, they
for
would have
terrorist charges. It would have been called terrorists.
They would have treated it. Yes, they would have. It would have absolutely been hate crimes charges on top of everything else. Malicious assault, assault with intent to kill, everything else, rioting, conspiracy to riot. We would have seen conspiracy charges. I mean, what happened was classic conspiracy, conspiracy. I was talking with one of the Charlottesville defendants recently, and this is the problem. When you defend yourself, they say it's a conspiracy, and they get you on conspiracy charges. And conspiracy is this catch-all term where they can just stick whatever they want and can put you away for forever based on this idea of conspiracy. What we saw at UCLA and around the country with these so-called counter-protesters was absolutely conspiracy. No charges have been filed against these people yet.
Well, they're working with the police. I mean, these Jewish protesters are working hand-in-hand with the police.
Yeah, here's the American flag guy that was out there. Now, he was a white boy. Now, the one that made black noises there at Old Miss, that guy, they still have doxed him and expelled him. So
he was a white guy.
Yes.
Who went along with it. And like with Jews, you lose. This is what happens when you team up with the Jews against the third worldists, okay? As all these Jews on Twitter and Jew lovers are saying that we should be doing. This is what happens. The Jews get away with it and the white kids get doxed and kicked out of schools.
We're
not
going
to fall for it anymore.
Here's one. Now contrast the guy in the American flag pajamas to this guy. A pro-Israel agitator hits someone over the head with a wooden plank at UCLA. Look at the nose on that guy, okay? That is one of the counter demonstrators with the ball caps on, right? Something else. Charlie Kirk and others were saying how, the Palestinian people are outside agitators. Well, these are in many cases older men who are ex-military. Again, we're going to get to this. But the shocking thing that happened at UCLA, as I said, we showed the videos of the counter protesters so-called attacking. Now let's see the video of the police response.
There's a struggle going on over here now, but again,
Wow.
Oh, jeez. My goodness.
Gina.
This is so dangerous. Again, they're shooting rubber bullets, but I can tell you from doing stories about rubber bullets, they are extremely painful. If they hit your leg, your arm, they could break your arm. But they're trying to get into this encampment to get everyone arrested and out of this encampment.
So move back. For your safety. For your safety.
Get back!
Here we have the police attacking. They're laughing while they're shooting these giant rubber bullets. They're 40-millimeter huge rubber bullets.
Rubber bullets that can break arms. It can break bones.
Yes.
I mean, imagine if that hit you in the face. It could kill somebody.
Here's where they are shooting it. Here's this woman cowering on the ground. Here they're shooting at people. Look at how they're tearing down the barriers. They're ripping down the flags. The police moved in and did not, as I said, they did not clear out the extremely violent pro-Israel counter-demonstrators. Instead, they came and attacked the Palestinian people, the protesters, who were just there minding their own business and defending themselves.
A lot of the times, professors, like liberal professors and
well, in other
women.
In other campuses, yeah, they were dragging them off in handcuffs. But this police response, as you guys can see, is total police brutality, excessive force. Now, what has become of this? So, well, there's several articles that I want to quickly go through. One is the New York Times, because, again, this got a lot of attention after this happened. The New York Times, of course, is incredibly pro-Israel, but they've had to tread carefully. This one, how police cleared the UCLA protest camp. Police officers dismantled a pro-Palestinian encampment and made arrests after a tense hours-long standoff overnight with demonstrators on the campus. Now, here is another case of where they say violent clashes a day earlier, back and forth between protesters and police involving counter-protesters who attacked the encampment, prompted administrators to call in law enforcement. So they used the violence of the Antifa, or shall we say the counter-protesters. Again, guys, I want to emphasize, I'll bet you in many cases your masked Antifa who attack Nazis are in some cases the same Jews. Yes.
Maybe even IDF.
Yes, because they operate with this. They know they have the family lawyer network. They know they have the Jewish organizations behind them. They know they have the law enforcement, the FBI, the Justice Department is behind them.
They're all rich trust fund kids.
And they have a license to aggressively use offensive violence. In other words, not defending themselves the way the Charlotte looks. Our guys at Charlottesville were, some of them came there ready to fight. But at no point at Charlottesville did our guys raid into the Antifa demonstrations, the Antifa camps.
No.
Kessler just pointed out there were two permits that they had, two separate areas that were not cleared by police. Our guys didn't go and raid them. Our guys were just trying to have their thing inside the park, which we just saw. We just drove through there and you got to see it.
It's small.
It's a tiny little park. And we were trying to have our thing there. That's what they were trying to do here at UCLA. Again, publicly funded university. This is the First Amendment. This is ground zero for the First Amendment of the Constitution. Okay. They were allowed to attack. These guys came and shut them down. So they say, oh, well, it's mutual combat. Well, it became mutual combat after cops stood down and let the counter-demonstrators or the Antifa attack, which is what they did. So they were saying peaceful protest, chanting, free Palestine. Then around 3 a.m., officers breached one of the barricades and began to pull apart plywood and other materials that the demonstrators had used to build a wall. The main barricade was dismantled. Students linking arms took the place. Then officers gave another dispersal order, corralled them, zip-tying their wrists and everything else. It said that they pulled up tents, removing Palestinian flags, tossing it aside. And they were equipped with a variety of, they said, the California Highway Patrol said they were equipped with a variety of non-lethal tools, including flashbang devices. I mean, they were just, after they'd been hit, these people, with the actual fireworks.
Yeah, no, it's insane.
By the IDF. Now they're getting hit with the flashbangs by the police. I mean, artillery.
It's insane.
So this was the way the New York Times initially reported on it. Very, very sanitized, right? Then you know, another one here, how counter-protesters at UCLA provoked violence, unchecked for hours. The New York Times used video by journalists, witnesses, and protesters to analyze hours of clashes and a delayed police response. And it says, this one says, violence erupted at the encampment that had been set up on April 25th. The clashes began after counter-protesters tried to dismantle the encampment's barricade. Pro-Palestinian protesters rushed to rebuild it, and violence ensued. Police arrived hours later, but they did not intervene immediately. After 100 videos, the violence ebbed and flowed for nearly 5 hours, mostly with little or no police intervention. The violence had been instigated by dozens of people who are seen in videos counter-protesting the encampment. And get this. It says, the video showed counter-protesters attacking students in the pro-Palestinian encampment for several hours, including beating them with sticks, using chemical sprays, and launching fireworks as weapons. As of Friday, no arrests had been made in connection with the attack.
Oh, all the Palestinian protesters got arrested.
Some of them got arrested.
Yeah.
Yes, but the people that were attacking, and they declared it illegal. But this is the thing. It says, it is not clear how the counter-protest was organized or what allegiances people committing the violence had. Many of them had pro-Israel slogans on their clothing. Some of them blared music, including Israel's national anthem, a Hebrew's children's song, and Harbu Darbu, an Israeli song about the IDF's Defense Forces campaign.
Well, so it's like, what? This isn't even like a conspiracy or like a secret or anything. I mean, they're admitting who they are.
And they played babies wailing.
Yeah,
and
that
this
was
is
just
something.
Weird,
this is something that they did, and I found the video. We'll play it. And this is something, Emily, I'll link to where they have done this. The IDF does this. They've been doing this to the Hamas people. And they say it's to lure out people to think that Palestinians, when they're shelling them, to lure them out and make them think that there's an infant in trouble.
I mean,
so they come out so that they can then hit them.
I mean, what more how much more cartoonishly evil can you get than to manipulate good people's impulse to help babies in order so that you can murder them? Oh, don't get any cartoonish ideas about Jews, though.
Well, they did the same thing, which is really creepy. And again, you can hear it in the video, babies wailing on loudspeakers.
Really fucking weird.
So here's them shooting the fireworks towards the encampment 6 times. It went off inside, causing protesters to scream. Some counter-protesters sprayed chemicals both into the encampment and directly at people's faces. At times, counter-protesters swarmed individuals, sometimes with a group descending on a single person, punching, kicking, and attacking people with makeshift weapons, including sticks, traffic cones, and wooden boards. In one video, protesters sheltering inside the encampment can be heard yelling, "Do not engage, hold the line." And then they say this. This is a key line. Except for a brief attempt to capture a loudspeaker used by the counter-protesters and water bottles being tossed out of the encampment, none of the videos analyzed by the Times show any clear instance of encampment protesters initiating confrontations with counter-protesters beyond defending the barricades. Again, that could be written about Charlottesville.
Well,
unite the right.
Can you imagine if they had written that about Charlottesville when it was just the total opposite?
Right.
At least now here, this is actually, you know, this back in when we did Charlottesville, it was extremely, we were very, very small group of people. And this concept of Jewish power was still very foreign to most people. So we had very little sympathy. But now because of the Jews, just insane genocide, murdering kids in HD, streaming it all over the internet, you know, now this narrative is finally being challenged.
It is. But the point is, this is a totally outrageous crushing of the First Amendment, Emily. This is a wholesale slaughter of First Amendment freedoms that these people are allowed to attack and are it's an irregular militia. That's what it is. It's irregular forces. It's irregular forces of Zog. It's non-uniform Zog militia.
But some are in uniform. Some were in uniform.
Not in American uniform.
Yes.
So here's another one where shortly before 1 a.m., more than 2 hours after the violence erupted, the mayor's office spokesman posted a statement, said UCLA officials had called the Los Angeles Police Department and were responding immediately. And then the California Highway Patrol began assembling nearby and with riot police of the LAPD. Counter-protesters applauded their arrival, chanting USA, USA. You see, this is where this thing started.
Oh my God.
The counter-protesters. It didn't start with the thing that happened in the South with the Jewish fraternity. It was already happening here where they were trying to spin it into this USA. But these are actual IDF, as we'll show. Mm-hmm. So here they are attacking. Just 4 minutes after the officers arrived, counter-protesters attacked a man standing dozens of feet from the officers. He's being attacked. The officers are sitting there watching. Nothing's happening. 20 minutes after police arrive, a video shows a counter-protester spraying a chemical towards the encampment during a scuffle over a metal barricade. Another counter-protester can be seen punching someone in the head after swinging a plank at barricades. That's that Jew with the plank. And then they rush the barricades. This is 15 minutes later. During the rush, a counter-protester pulls away a metal barricade from a woman yelling, "You stand no chance, old lady." The police, throughout the intermittent violence, are captured on video standing about 300 feet away from the area for roughly an hour without stepping in. They're just sitting there watching this massacre take place.
Mm-hmm. And they were ordered to do that.
Standing down.
Yep.
And then at 2:42 a.m., they move towards the encampment, and then they start breaking it up. And what they did then was they just brutalized these people. I mean, they started hitting them with the rubber bullets and spraying them, and they just completely smashed the encampment. And here's another article from the New York Times. A chaotic night at UCLA raises questions about police response. And again, they're still making it about, like, why did the police not intervene? But they did intervene. They intervened to destroy the Palestinian encampment.
Well, it was a two-front assault. It was a coordinated two-front.
Well, two waves.
Two waves.
Yes,
yeah,
two waves.
First the IDF guerrilla warfare, and then the cops come in to clean it up. I mean, this was obviously coordinated. If there's any conspiracy, this is it. Clear-cut case.
Yes, and this was absolutely planned and well-funded. So what happened then? And here's a headline, "Police shoot Palestine activists in the head with rubber bullets."
Riot police, head?
Yes, riot police storm the UCLA Palestine camp and open fire with rubber bullets. Activists say five students were hit in the head, while videos from the scene show one woman suffered a huge open wound on her buttocks from the impact of a rubber bullet. Again, these rubber bullets are not bullets. I mean, they're like the size of hand grenades. Police were filmed shooting protesters by Fox 11, whose reporters remarked how dangerous rubber bullets were. And when they did this, the cops can be seen laughing in the video as they're just like gleefully. It's like target practice. They clearly got orders, the carte blanche.
Yeah.
They had, you have a license to kill, basically.
Yeah. And that's what we're saying is like, you know, so many people get gay-opt into supporting the police. Well, they will turn on American citizens just like that if their Jewish masters tell them to do it.
So what happened around the 15th and the 16th of this month was it came out who some of these people were. The so-called counter-demonstrators chanting USA, USA were in many cases actual Israelis, actual members of the IDF.
Yes.
IDF in training.
Again, just a microcosm of everything Israel does.
Yeah. When they had the Mossad free zone sign up, it was literally Mossad attacking their camp. So again, that's the big takeaway from all this, guys, is not simply that this was that this is the First Amendment being shut down by police and irregulars who are working with the government, working with the powers that be, the Justice Department, Merrick Garland's, you know, goons. It's actually that it is a foreign power. It is a foreign power. It is Israel. It is Israeli intelligence and the Israeli government and their connections in the United States, this web of traitors and spies. They are the ones shutting down free speech on college, on American college campuses. It would be bad enough if it was the U.S. government shutting down free speech on college campuses. But it is a foreign government shutting down free speech on our own college campuses.
Yeah, and meanwhile, you have the Daily Wire, Ben Shapiro, claiming to be the champions of free speech. The Daily Wire, who serves that foreign nation under the guise of serving Americans.
Right. So here is a couple of pieces about this. First of all, Justice Report. Let's start there. IDF member and Israeli CEO linked to bloody attack at UCLA. And a lot of this came from a CNN investigation called Unmasking Counter-Protesters Who Attacked UCLA's Pro-Palestine Encampment. On Tuesday, April 30th, anti-war protesters peacefully demonstrating on the campus of UCLA were subjected to a bloody attack by a gang of flag-waving Zionists. Using pepper spray, metal pipes, wooden boards, and fireworks, the assailants, many of them masked, were able to victimize protesters over the course of 3 long hours with police merely standing by the wayside. A chilling video quickly spread on social media depicting one man wielding a wooden board, violently clubbing another man over the head numerous times before scurrying it away. At the end of the one-sided melee, 3 people were said to have been nearly killed, with one man sustaining serious injuries to the scalp. Despite the severity of these crimes, no arrests have been made, leaving many to question the obvious double standard present in American law enforcement, as groups of violent Zionists skirt accountability for what could very well constitute an act of politically motivated terror. Yeah. In the American homeland. Thanks to the work of online sleuths, however, the identities of 2 of the most violent men seen in the videos of the UCLA counter-protest have finally been identified. According to researchers, the men are Alan Abishur, the wealthy co-founder of a Zionist nonprofit seeking to court black support for Israel, and Eliran Bismut, an active member of the Israeli Defense Forces whose brother was recently killed in Gaza by a resistance booby trap. Bismut, the man believed to be behind a savage attack that may have left a man with permanent brain damage, has so far skirted accountability for the crime. Sources close to the protest allege the toupee-wearing Israeli national broke 4 fingers on the left hand of a 70-year-old woman and knocked another female protester unconscious with a closed fist. Look at that guy.
Jesus. Just like a Jew.
According to now private social media accounts, Bismut is an IDF foot soldier who can be seen pictured with weapons in hand at numerous locations inside Israel. Like many young Israelis, he appears to have been conscripted into the IDF alongside some of his closest family members. Eliran's millionaire brother, Staff Sergeant Adam Bismut, was said to have been one of 24 Israeli troops killed in action in Khan Yunis. And this guy was the CEO of Israeli AI development firm Sitebit, which uses AI to analyze computer feeds. The other Zionist identified by online researchers was named as wealthy housing developer Alan Ibishur. Ibishur, who can be seen pepper spraying and physically assaulting UCLA protesters on video, is listed as being the CEO or CFO of over 4 different nonprofit organizations located in Van Nuys, California, which, according to public records, all appear to be staffed by close family members, the nonprofit industrial complex.
So what are the odds these protesters just happen to have insane connections and millions of dollars and ties to the government? Did you see that voicemail that the one guy left the Palestinian protester? He's like, I'm going to leak your social security number. I'm going to ruin your credit score. You're never going to buy a house. You're never going to own a phone again.
Yeah.
They threaten them financially. It's like, it's so Jewy.
You little fucking rat. You want us to ruin your fucking credit, you fucking dumbass bitch? You'll never buy a house, you fucking moron. You'll never be able to fucking get a phone again. I got mad shit set up for you. If you don't take down my Instagram post, you should move out of your fucking apartment, you little fucking piece of shit. I'll break your fucking face. I'll put your whole fucking social security number all over. You little fucking rat. I got your driver's license and I got your social security number. Take it down.
This just shows how these networks work. I mean, these guys are CEOs, CFOs.
And they have access to the feds where they can just get personal information just like that and use it against people, and they're openly admitting it.
Yes. These two, the guy and his brother, are listed as co-founders of the Love Israel movement, a.k.a. the Love Israel movement. Organization bills itself as melding Israeli Jews with American blacks to renew the 1960s blackish-Jewish relationship.
What are you talking about? The rap industry? Like,
yeah. A website for the NGO allows users to petition the government to stop sending humanitarian aid to war-torn Gaza under the auspices of stopping the Palestinian industrial complex. Other causes their NGOs champion, including spreading of Israeli kidnap propaganda on freeway boards, teaching others to be pro-Semitic, giving victims of imposed Sharia a platform to attack Islam, etc. The Zionist activist currently works for the family-owned West Hollywood architectural design and development firm House of Shore, whose Instagram and website went private shortly after he was exposed. He lives in a multi-million-dollar palatial estate in Beverly Hills.
Wow.
So this is who we have.
That's in the IDF.
This guy has a long history of violence tied to Zionism.
I mean, these are like internal terrorists. This is like terrorists from the terrorist state of Israel that Americans fund with our tax dollars, the terrorism and the genocide of innocent people in Gaza, and the terrorism against American citizens. We're funding our own terrorism.
Yes.
And here we have, this is what the terrorists look like. They're living in our country. They're living in our cities. They have millions of dollars. They have connections to the government and the Israeli government.
Yes.
And they're committing crimes. They have, like, ties to Mossad. I mean, Likud, like, everything.
And some of them are Antifa. I mean, here's one. Two more of the violent individuals later identified as 40-year-old Jonathan Beermug Cantrawi of Tarzana, California, and Arlan Mitnick were a pair of Jewish, quote, skinheads against racial prejudice, a subsect of the far-left Antifa movement. So some of them are literal Antifa. Despite instigating the street clashes and issuing violent threats, the pair walked away without charges. Now, Steve Saylor wrote a piece in Tacky's magazine.
Steve Saylor, another person I met this month.
UCLA's mostly peaceful counter-protest.
So yeah, Steve Saylor, he called out this gay op as well, so good for him. In the most violent episode so far in the vastly publicized campus protests against Israel's war on Gaza, at the end of April, a goon squad of nationalist whites attacked the encampment of diverse UCLA students while police stood back and let the militia wail on the pro-Palestinian demonstrators for a few hours. Finally, the cops got between the protesters and the attacking counter-protesters, then let the instigators go. The next night, the police dismantled the encampment and arrested over 200 anti-Israel activists. In an era when the establishment obsesses over right-wing violence, last year, for example, President Biden declared white supremacy is the single most dangerous terrorist threat in our homeland. One might think that the brawl at UCLA would by now be almost as exhaustively reported as Jan 6th or Charlottesville. But instead, you have to read news accounts closely to even guess who the hard men at UCLA were.
Perhaps, though, I'm just prejudiced in thinking that the Battle of UCLA was a big deal. He lives about 12 miles north of UCLA, earned an MBA at UCLA in 1982.
He says if the right-wing mob had been wearing Make America Great Again baseball caps, shouting Christ is King, and singing Russian songs about crushing Ukrainians, the struggle on the UCLA quad would be the biggest news story of the year. Indeed, the New York Times and Washington Post have published lengthy investigative pieces demonstrating conclusively that outside agitators instigated the night of violence in front of UCLA's Royce Hall. Yet both newspapers have been extremely reticent about the key question, who were these far-right thugs?
So he finally says it. As far as I can tell, the bruisers were largely Israelis, Israeli Americans, and other Jews. Shouldn't come as a huge surprise to anyone living near UCLA. According to 2015 estimate, more than 250,000 Israelis live in Los Angeles.
Mm-hmm.
With UCLA being the center.
Look, it says, as I explained in Tacky's magazine in 2015, UCLA student body politics is now largely a war between pro-Palestinian non-whites versus Israelis and other Jews, with Israeli zillionaire Adam Milstein funding the Jewish campaigns for student body president.
Let's play some of this CNN clip about who actually were the counter-protesters at UCLA.
This is the worst violence of any of the ongoing college protests. UCLA,
where counter-protesters used sticks and boards against a pro-Palestine encampment. It was more than 3 hours of unrestrained violence the night of April 30th that led to injuries and bloody scenes as campus security and law enforcement allowed it to continue.
They were there spraying, they were there pulling barriers, and they were there to very clearly do some serious harm to the students who were on campus.
When you look at the counter-protesters, how many of them were UCLA students?
I would say basically none of them.
Who are the most aggressive offenders? A CNN investigation of hundreds of videos from multiple sources shows many of them are outsiders, not UCLA students. Among the people who showed up that night, far-right with no apparent connection to the Middle East war, others driven by real beliefs. Among them, this man. He strikes a pro-Palestine protester with a long white pole and is part of a mob that pummels the man as he falls to the ground.
Stop.
He's seen in multiple videos wearing this white mask, striking the barriers, throwing objects into the encampment. Without his mask, we see who he is. 18-year-old Idan Ohn of Beverly Hills, a senior at a local high school.
Come inside to the kitchen. How do I get inside?
I spoke with his mother.
Hi there. Are you Sharon? Hi.
How are you?
Hi. Let me introduce us.
She did not want to be on camera, but quickly identified her son from this picture at UCLA that night. She described in detail how her son found the mask and pole on the ground and said he was defending himself in this fight. On her Facebook page, Idan Ohn's mother posted and circled a screen grab of her son from a local TV station. She wrote in Hebrew, "Idan went to bully the Palestinian students in the tents at UCLA." Idan's mother and father proudly support Israel and defended their son's actions at UCLA, saying he is heading to Israel to join the IDF. After our interview, she texted to say Idan denies being at UCLA. Older men were also at the front of the violence. Tom Bibian recorded pulling bike racks, plywood, kicking protesters, throwing cones at the students in the encampment, water bottles at protesters, and yelling expletives. We went to ask Bibian why he'd gone to the campus that night.
Hi, you're Mr. Bibian.
Yeah, can you turn that off? You don't have permission to record me.
Bibian was wearing the same jacket he had on in the video from UCLA. He's a Los Angeles resident, age 42, seen at a 2022 pro-Trump protest outside the Los Angeles FBI office. He did not want to explain why he's on video doing this.
You're being a little rude, and I'm going to call the police if you don't leave.
Sure. Okay.
We identified not just Tom Bibian, but other older men who have no apparent affiliation with UCLA.
I hate to say it, but I was expecting us to start working on an obituary the next day because I thought something that serious would happen to the students in the encampment.
Do you feel like they won?
Based on the way they were cheering when the police arrived Tuesday night, I think they might feel that they won.
USA! USA! USA!
So here's the last one, guys, that I just wanted to cover because there's a lot more on this, but this one is also very important. This is an article from The Nation. Remember the group of pro-Israel people who assaulted the Palestinian encampment at UCLA? This article draws connections between them, the ADL, and Israeli intelligence. Why is a foreign intelligence agency involved in U.S. political violence? It says the Israel-affiliated organization leading the backlash against student protests, the Israeli-American Council, has worked in tandem with Israeli intelligence agencies for years. Last month, its leaders vowed to shut down the encampment at UCLA. It starts out, it was time to fight back on America's college campuses, and the little-known Israeli-American Council, an organization with close ties to Israeli intelligence and made up mostly of Israeli expats, decided that it would lead the nationwide charge. On Sunday, April 28th, as members of the group arrived on UCLA's grass-covered Dixon Plaza, the IAC CEO, Elon Carr, took the stage. a Republican politician, former member of the National Council of AIPAC, and special envoy to monitor and combat anti-Semitism in the Trump administration, he had little regard for anyone who disparaged Israel. In the past, he had compared the call for an economic boycott of Israel to actions by the Nazis. And he has said that the group Jewish Voices for Peace openly traffics in anti-Semitism. Also present there with the counter-protesters is Israel's consul general to the Pacific Southwest, Israel Bakar. His first name is Israel. And Jonathan Greenblatt was also there, CEO of the Anti-Defamation League. He said this, quote, "We will take back our streets. We will take back our campuses from Columbia University to UCLA and everywhere in between," he said.
Oh, my gosh. So the Greenblatt, the guy that's in charge of the hate groups and the hate mobs and the calling out racial supremacy, is saying we need a Zionist takeover of the streets.
They're initiating the street, planned, organized street violence.
The
yes.
irony. This is the conspiracy.
Yes, yeah. This is the conspiracy. See, here's the thing. You could get these people not only on conspiracy charges, everything that the Charlottesville people were prosecuted on, you could prosecute these people on. You could have lawsuits, private lawsuits. You could get them for violating the Foreign Agent Registration Act, and you could also get them for the Espionage Act.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, these people could be put in prison and deported to Israel.
These guys, these are all criminals. Jonathan Greenblatt is a criminal.
Yes.
He should be put in jail. I mean, with all the stuff that's saying you can't support terrorists. I mean, America is literally forced to fund terrorists
yes.
through anti-BDS laws. Yeah, these guys need to all be in jail.
So he says that they're going to take the streets back. The question is, given IAC's long history of close links to Israeli intelligence organizations, for whom are they taking the campuses back? During the rally, a supporter of Israel pulled out a switchblade and slashed through a pro-Palestinian poster while others confronted pro-Palestine demonstrators and a protester's face was bloodied. They tried to climb over the barricade, etc. Truly unbelievable aggression against the pro-Palestinian protesters, said Danielle Carr, assistant professor. They set up a massive video screen with a clear view of the encampment. They started with a psychological technique, similar to one used by the U.S. military against accused terrorists at Guantanamo Bay. They had this music playing with a strobe light flashing. This is an IDF technique.
Yeah, yeah. A running torrent of loud, disturbing sounds over a stereo. An eagle screeching, a child crying, and blasted a Hebrew rendition of the song Baby Shark on repeat late at night so that campers could not sleep.
Yeah, see, these are techniques. These are old psychological warfare techniques.
Yeah, psychological warfare.
This is warfare.
Yes.
This is the IDF waging terroristic warfare on students, American students, peacefully demonstrating on a public university.
Yeah.
That's what this is. You could say that this was an Israeli terrorist attack on the United States and on the Constitution.
You can say that. Yes, absolutely.
And Jonathan Greenblatt is complicit in it, and he's a spy and a traitor. I mean, that's what these people are.
Greenblatt's got to go, dude.
So let's go through some more. Just 2 days later, they returned to shut down the encampment in what was called by Vice Chancellor Mary Osako horrific acts of violence. They moved close to the encampment and blared Harbu Darbu, the wartime anthem. Then they played gruesome footage from the October 7th attacks. They played on a loop a children's song that IDFs have reportedly blasted at Palestinian prisoners for hours on end as a form of torture, as well as an Israeli song about the IDF camping in Gaza. They then returned after midnight, ripping down the barriers, violently attacking those inside, instigated by dozens of people seen in videos counter-protesting the encampment, said the New York Times. That's what we covered.
I mean, I'm surprised they weren't just playing porn on a loop, because that's what they do.
Yeah.
That's what they've done as a weapon of warfare.
According to Piper French, a mob of men swung 2x4s with nails sticking out of them, uttered death and rape threats, punched and maced 4 student journalists, brought one to the ground, beat him at length. 25 pro-Palestinian protesters were taken to the hospital, nor was there any assistance from local police, who oddly waited for more than 3.5 hours before breaking up the one-sided violence. So what happened here, with nobody stepping in, They said among the group of police was Aaron Cohen, a well-known civilian police instructor who teaches Israeli-style counterintelligence tactics. At one point, he disguised himself with a keffiyeh, a traditional Palestinian checkered scarf that hid his face except for his eyes, and infiltrated the encampment. He formerly worked for Israel's Mista Avrim, or Arabist unit, a group specifically trained to assimilate among the local Arab population and tasked with performing high-risk terrorist arrests, intelligence gathering, targeted assassinations, and used disguise and surprises as their main weapon.
So this is literally Mossad. Mossad terrorists are in our police forces.
And he says, last night I did a special investigation. I broke out the old keffiyeh, which has become the new hipster Nazi symbol.
That's funny.
They're Nazis in his mind.
Listen, take the Jews at their word. Like, believe the Jews when they say who their enemies are. Don't believe them for most things, but believe them when they say who their enemies are.
He said he'd been invited to join the sheriff's office behind the wire with their special response team, a clear indication of the close ties between former members of Israeli intelligence and U.S. law enforcement. And this group, the IAC, for years was largely financed and led by Las Vegas mega billionaire Sheldon Adelson, the top contributor to the 2020 Trump campaign.
Yeah. And
which also has close ties to Israeli intelligence.
Yeah. And Trump, guys, Trump is a huge Zionist. I mean, his commentary on the situation was good for a little bit. Now it's getting very, very bad.
It talks about their highly sophisticated intelligence unit that targeted innocent Americans around the country, described by IAC members in 2016. Guy went back to Israel after doing this. So this article is great. We don't have time to go through the whole thing, but this is an Israeli military intelligence operation in the United States, and this was Israeli-backed militia, and they had the cops in their pocket. They were working with the police so that they could shut these things down.
Yeah, I mean, this guy Erdan has a secret headquarters hidden in a high-rise building in Tel Aviv.
Yes.
Cuomo appointed Erdan as honorary grand marshal of the Celebrate Israel parade on June 4th, 2017, despite the fact that he was Netanyahu's chief of covert operations in the United States.
The IAC has announced the latest front in Israel's ever-expanding war on American students to crush the protests and demonstrations that seek an end to Israel's genocide in Gaza and its brutal military occupation of Palestine. It is a war long fought in secret by Minister of Strategic Affairs Erdan and long advocated by Milstein, the IAC's co-founder. He has gone so far as to call the fight for Palestinian rights and the boycott of Israel, quote, a sophisticated hate movement committed to the destruction of the Jewish people in the times of Israel in 2017. Quote, we need to go on the offense, he said in a speech that year at the Center for Entrepreneurial Jewish Philanthropy Summit. Quote, we should teach them that anyone that attacks us, there is a price, there is accountability. We need to go on the attack. Judging from the hours of beatings and violence directed at the UCLA students by the metal pole-wielding counter-demonstrators last month following the IAC rally, Milstein and Erdan, now Israel's ambassador to the UN, appear to have finally gotten their wish. So there you have it, guys.
There you have it.
This is what happened at UCLA. This is a big deal. This is an extremely big deal.
Oh, yeah.
And actually what it is it's lifting the veil on what the Antifa phenomenon was.
Right.
What Antifa was that was attacking us in 2017 and 2018, specifically the alt-right, and has been involved with doxing and harassment, is part of Israeli intelligence. It is part of a foreign spy traitor network inside the United States determined to shut down the free speech rights, the constitutional rights of American citizens.